Movie buff specialist Phil and John are back, and we are concluding phase one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe today with the Avengers from 2012. And we're going to talk about Gran Turismo, based on a true story. Racing is life. Simulation. Racing is life. Racing is not a game. It's life. 2023. That's the full title, I think. Very subtle. They don't really hint at it much throughout the movie. But here we are to break down both of these movies, which this will be the probably the worst two movies we talk about in a podcast where we universally hate them. Like, I gave John a hard time for Columbus. He gave me a hard time for my Whit Stillman likes back when we were doing our top 100 movies. But we both are high rating this week was 1.5 stars. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I am curious, John, to see, because I don't know if we've ever discussed it, but I'm curious to see if you like the Avengers in 2012 and how it has grown over the course of the 11 years now that Marvel has just dominated the universe. But we're going to start with Gran Turismo, which it's Gran Turismo. I keep saying Turismo, but Gran Turismo with Nissan, as Orlando Bloom calls it over and over again in the movie, not Nissan, which really just confused my American brain where everything is Nissan every day. And I don't know if anybody knows, but Gran Turismo is a simulation. It is not a video game. It is a simulation. It is real. It is like real life, blah, blah, blah. This movie has a good story. And this story is told in arguably the worst possible way. And for the first hour and 30 minutes of this movie, I did nothing but cringe at the screen. And like, you know how, like, when something cringy happens because we're millennials, we like want to look at our phone. You just want to be like, okay, like, yeah, even if you're like, what time is it? Just like a safety mechanism. I wanted to look at my phone so often during this movie because I was so uncomfortable with the seriousness of the way they were delivering the absolute cheeseball lines that they were delivering. So anyway, hello.
Yeah, this movie was atrocious. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, I rated it lower than you did. Mm-hmm. And when you saw it, you was like, 1.5. Oh, what am I getting into? And I'm like, oh my God, this is actually worse than Phil said. Mm-hmm. Because it is, like you said, it's a very compelling story. I think, like, Jan's story is so interesting, but it's constructed in a way that makes absolutely no sense. I got out of the movie and I turned to my brother-in-law and I said, there wasn't a single relationship in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I don't know how that's possible.
He's in love, John. He's in love with that Audrey girl who he doesn't stop looking at on his phone. LOL, smiley face.
But even then, like, sure, whatever. We get that story, which unneeded, not necessary to the film at all. There's no relationship between him and his father, which is supposed to be an emotional point in the movie. There's no relationship between him and the coach, which is supposed to be an emotional point of the movie. There's no relationship between him and any of the other racers. There's no, like, I don't understand how you make this movie and you don't just go, okay, it's based on a true story. It doesn't have to be exactly what happened. Just embellish things a little. Like, give us a little bit of back and forth so we care about anyone in this movie.
Yeah. No, and like, I think that's what bothered me the most. And the thing is, I understand that the visual effects are like good, air quotes, but we've seen racing movies so much now in the recent years, whether it be Rush by Ron Howard or Ford versus Ferrari, which was an Oscar nominated movie. And we see these racing movies, and at the end of the day, hearing vroom, 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 and they put the camera low, like, it's honestly not that hard to do. I'm sorry, but like, if you're a good action director, we've seen the Fast and the Furious do it since 2001. Like, there is so much ability nowadays. And they tried to be a little different where they were, like, showing first, second, third place, like they do in the Gran Turismo games and blah, blah, blah. And, like, the part where they show him, like, back out and he's sitting at his, like, little desktop or whatever, and he's playing. But while the driving sequences were fine, they were nothing groundbreaking. They were nothing extra special. There was nothing, like, awesome about them. And then when you add that on top of the fact that the relationships that are going on without the driving are absolute cartoons, it's really brutal. Like, it's a really bad watch because you might sit there and say, wow, okay, like, I hope he wins this. What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Like, this is okay. Let's see it happen. But then you're like, why do I care about this kid? Like, I really don't care about this kid. Jaimin Hansu, probably with the worst role of his life. And it's not his acting that's bad. It's a terrible role. It's such a stereotypical, like, blah, blah father. And and then you have, like, I really feel like David Harbour gave, like, an excellent performance. Mm-hmm. But he was reading off the back of a napkin at a Denny's the whole time. Like, it's atrocious, the dialogue that he is stuck delivering in this movie. And it doesn't deserve his Mickey from Rocky performance. Like, it doesn't deserve his Christian Bale in The Fighter, which is iconic. It's not that level. But it doesn't deserve that level of effort that he put in because there's nothing to it. And I got to say, I miss the man. I love him. I'm so happy he got a leading role. Orlando Bloom is freaking awful in this movie.
Yes.
And his character, so whatever his pitch was at the beginning when he's talking to the Nissan people, I was like, wait, that's really what this movie is based on? And they bought that? Like, is that supposed to tell me that, like, the executives at Nissan are stupid? I don't understand. Like, his pitch, I sat there and I was like, okay, like, where's the hook? And he walked away and I was like, so there's no hook. There is zero hook right now. Like, what is the point of this movie? And why couldn't it be a little bit more fleshed out?
Yeah. Also, why is he presenting this pitch to 8 people in a massive auditorium?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they say it's something about there's not enough young drivers or something who want Nissan cars. Yeah. Like, Gran Turismo, did this make people want to go buy Nissans? I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, that's the big thing with this movie is, like, there's so many question marks about it. Even, like, in the end title cards where it's, like, saying what, like, the consequences of these events are, it's like, this changed racing forever. How?
Yeah.
How did it change racing? What are you talking about?
Like, are there other sim drivers?
I think most racers practice on sims now. Mm-hmm. I think. I don't know. I'm not a race car driver. I don't particularly watch cars being raced. I don't know the answer to this. But is that what's happening? Because you left it really ambiguous, and I don't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, again, like, I think the actors in this tried their best, but they were just given nothing. Because, like, the lead kid's, like, I don't think he's a bad actor. I think he's fine. He's serviceable in an action movie. But that the scenes, every scene is so, like, 1995 cliche acting and, like, dialogue and, like, where it starts and where it goes. The scene where, like, he's gonna, like, kiss the girl when they're at the bridge, and then the cops come, and then he drives away, and then he peels out because he's not gonna miss his race the next day. Like, I was like, oh my God, what am I watching? Like, this is so cheesy. And sometimes cheesy can work. Like, sometimes it depends on what it is, but, like, with sports movies, a lot of times they do have really cheesy moments. But I don't understand what a lot of the cheesy moments in this movie were trying to prove towards the overall storyline of this movie. Because really, if you break down the story for this movie, this is about a marketing executive who is trying to get people to buy Nissan cars. So he uses sim drivers. Mm-hmm. Does the marketing executive succeed? I don't know. Like, I know that the kid wins the race and wanted to be a race car driver. I don't know anything about any of his other race car driving buddies or evil ones. I know Kappa is the meanie weenies of all time. They certainly aren't nice people. But I don't know anything else that happened in this movie. Like, I don't know. Like, what's the through line? Like, what is the end? Did Orlando Bloom succeed when he's running up and, like, being like, we need to stop this or get him in the car, whatever the nonsense moment of this movie is? I don't know. Like, it just – and, like, I didn't buy that he was that bad in front of a camera. I didn't buy that the other kid was all that charismatic in front of a camera. Like, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know who wrote this. I mean,
this movie was supposed to
three writer strike.
Well, this movie started production in 2013 and had 3 different scripts. And this is what we landed on.
That's what always happens, man. We talked about that with Demeter, right? Like, it's the same thing. Like, what does it go through in that in-between phase? And it starts with Jason Hall, who did American Sniper and Thank You for Your Service. And it ends with Zach Balin, who's hot now, who did King Richard, who did Creed 3, and then he does Gran Turismo. And it seems like this was Jason Hall's vision at one point, because this, if it was in production in 2013, he did 2014, he did American Sniper. 2017, he does Thank You for Your Service. He still gets a writing credit on Gran Turismo, but this has Zach Balin written all over it. And honestly, I like King Richard. I didn't see Creed 3, but like I like King Richard. I don't think it's great, but I enjoy it. But this is, I think, what happens when it's not your like baby from the start, and it turns into just pounding out whatever you can pound out. And this is what we got. And maybe they were trying to rely more on the visuals than the story, but I felt nothing at the end of this movie except like cringing. Like I just kept cringing. And like, if I see one more scene of like people like fake jumping up and cheering, it was so poor. Like even those moments were so bad. It's like, come on.
I just don't understand how you plot this movie the way they did. And to be fair, there's like no plot in this movie. But the first half of this movie is the Gran Turismo Academy. And then the second half is like getting his license and winning, or like hitting the podium in a race.
There you go.
I couldn't say that word. It wouldn't come out. But why? Why are these both given equal amounts of time? Isn't the more interesting aspect of this the GT Academy?
I thought so.
Like, why is there no adversity? Why aren't we seeing the relationships between these kids who have just won a video game contest to come learn how to race cars?
And yeah, and instead they go the route of let's be super cheesy where everybody's on the side of our main character except for the one kid who's really good at driving and probably going to win. And then he loses by 0.1 or 0.001 seconds. And then they have the conversation about, should we say it was him? Who cares? He's better. Like, where was the buildup to that? Like, I get that they showed a couple little scenes of the one kid being really smooth with the cameras, but why not have conversations between Orlando Bloom talking to people being like, we can't have it be this guy. If he wins the race, we need to figure out a way to rig it. That's not in there. And that makes for boring filmmaking. And then they're all rooting for him and they're buddy-buddy. And then at the end, when he's on the same team as that kid, I feel nothing. I feel absolutely nothing.
Well, that probably also has to do with the fact that we had no reason to believe these kids were coming back at the end of the movie. Like, all of a sudden, they're just like, oh, hey, yeah, these two people who came second and third, they've been racing the minor circuits. What?
Yeah.
Where is this coming from? Like, why isn't this built up at all?
And why don't we care about them in any way? Like, I get that the main character of the movie is the main character of the movie, but these other two also kind of podiumed at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So why aren't they getting any type of love? Why instead is one a villain and one just has a mustache and gets tired during the race? Like, like what in the world?
Even him getting tired and resulting in Jan having to like race extra more than they wanted him to finish the race. Like, that's just brushed over. Like, every interesting plot point in this movie is so shallow and just has no depth to it whatsoever, so that you don't care.
It made me think of a movie that you're 100% wrong about, which is Breaking Away, which is a movie that I really love. And I think about in that movie when they are in the bike race at the end and they're racing. We know everything about the Cutters that we could possibly need to know about the Cutters when that race is happening. We know that Dennis Quaid is a burnout loser ex-player. We know that Jackie Earle Haley is just like a small, unathletic guy who's totally screwed and over his head. And we know that, what's his name? The guy from Home Alone. We know that he's just kind of like a goof. Like, they're just all, they're all nothing. And they all have to rely on Dennis Christopher. So when Dennis Christopher gets hurt and then the other people have to take over, it's like inspirational because you're like, these guys are doing it to prove it to themselves. They're doing it to prove it to their friend. They're doing it to be there for them. They're doing it for more than just like winning the race. It's about pride. It's about something so big. And that's a small town, Indiana bike race that ultimately nobody cares about unless you go to Indiana University. And yet it has such an emotional impact when there's a win. This is like a worldwide, we're flying around in the private jets, we're driving the fancy cars, we're doing all that. There's no heart. There's no heart. And when he kills the guy with the car, I felt nothing. I felt absolutely nothing. And then like, yeah, okay, you start to feel, did I kill somebody? Yeah, but go finish your lap. And it's like, okay, like let's gloss over the fact that he just like murdered somebody with a vehicle. And I get he didn't. It's not murder, but you know what I mean. He just killed somebody with a vehicle. And like, yeah, sure, we'll just be like, it's okay. You're going to learn from this. Like, don't worry about anything else, right?
Well, even then, the way they handle this entire situation seems so unrealistic to me, in which Jan wakes up in the hospital and the first thing they tell him is like, yeah, you killed someone.
Yeah.
You know what you don't do? You don't tell someone who just woke up from a semi-coma that they killed someone.
Yeah.
Like, there are better ways to approach that. And it seems like the movie did it this way in order to, like, brush past it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just like, this should have, like, this emotional weight, right? Especially because this is kind of like, this is what's relating Jan to David Harbour's character, right? Like, this is the reason why David Harbour's character stopped racing was because he was in a crash that ended up having someone die on the way to the hospital. That should be a big, pivotal moment, an emotional moment, bonding these two characters, and we don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it looks like this accident, I'm reading about it now, it was pushed by Jan Martinborough to be in the movie, but it actually didn't take place until well after the Le Mans race. So he had already like gone through Le Mans and everything. And I think that's what bothers me too. This had a very like Bohemian Rhapsody feel to it, except I do think this was a better movie than Bohemian Rhapsody. Yikes. Yeah, I know. That just says about Bohemian Rhapsody. But it has a Bohemian Rhapsody feel to it where it's like, well, we did Live Aid and everybody's going to die of AIDS. Oh, here's Freddie Mercury and Queen. And now they made so much money and the day is saved and the phone's ringing off the hook. Like, that's not what happened. That is not what happened. And it's so well documented for Bohemian Rhapsody. It's like, stop. Cut it out. Like, that is not true. And we all know it's not true. You're doing this for the movies to pull emotional strings, but it doesn't work because it's too well known. And like this, it felt like they were trying to create a controversy and create a through line. And that's like, yeah, people might not have liked sim racers because they thought it was dangerous, but he hadn't killed somebody before the 24 hours of Le Mans. And the whole point of the third act is we have to podium at 24 hours of Le Mans or we're not going to be allowed to drive anymore. Well, that's not true. That's not a real thing. And even in the movie, it doesn't feel believable because why? If you finish third place, all of a sudden you can't kill somebody with your car?
Yeah. It's just not addressing like what the concerns about sim racing was, right? And that's because the film doesn't build up what the concerns about sim racing are, right?
Yeah.
It tries to put this emphasis on the fact that sim racers aren't real racers because they're just playing video games.
Yeah.
Like they don't actually know like the athlete aspect, but like, because there's no relationship between, say, Jan and the, who were the gold guys again? Who were the bad guys again?
Kappa.
Because there's no relationship between Jan and Kappa, like, we don't get that. We don't get tension between these racers where the racers feel these people are lesser and what the reasoning behind it is. Again, I get it. If those interactions didn't happen, you're not putting it there. It's a movie. Embellish it. We literally just talked about an accident that happened after the entire thing of this movie that was put in here. And I get why Jan Martinborough would push for this scene to be in this movie. It's probably a massive, massive point in his lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? Like a life-altering event. I get that. But you did nothing with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And they tried to turn it into like a little bit more serious, but the movie didn't feel like it earned that. And like, again, I think a lot of it just came down to the handling was just so corny that it just didn't do it for me.
I don't get how we have this relationship with the father, right? And it's set up. It said, Dad, you took me to see this car when I was 5. And like, I've wanted to be a racer ever since then. Like, great. Don't tell us. Show us that.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's no tension between the father and his son other than you can't be a racer. You can't afford it.
It was so, so dated. Go outside and play soccer. Don't play.
Yeah, right.
Is it 1997? like by the mid 2000s, late 2000s, it was pretty well established that you could make money playing video games. And this movie is supposed to take place in like 2011, 2012, 2013. It was very well established. You can make money playing video games by that point. Like, give me, but you should play soccer, one of the least profitable sports, if you don't make the top leagues. Like, are you out of your mind? Like, give me a break. And so, like, it just felt so cheesy. And it felt like me having an argument with my parents when I wanted to sit inside on a Saturday when it was 72 degrees outside. And like, that was like an issue for them. Like,
Yeah,
maybe when you're five, because they don't want you to just drink soda and do whatever. But like, if you're like, do you really care what like your 17, 18 year old kid wants to do? And is him playing video games rather than playing soccer really the reason why he's going to be a failure at life? Like, are you kidding? There's a lot of people who go outside and play soccer with their friends on Saturdays and Sundays who don't succeed. Like, what are we talking about here?
It's just like, build that up, because that should, again, it should be this emotional point in this film, right? This is the emotional tension, is the fact that Jan is going and proving his dad wrong, right? He's proving him wrong. He did it. He went and he is racing for an actual, like, big name team. That's a big deal. And it's like, we get like this one scene at the end of the movie where it's like, you did it.
Yeah.
We don't even get like, I'm proud of you.
No, it's, I'm so proud of you, son. And he goes, no, dad, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
And like, I felt like it was that meme where it's, you're giving up your dream, dad. No, I'm giving up your dream, dad. Like, that's what this felt like. It was like, here's the sledgehammer. Bang, 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 bang. I'm just like, my God, save my skull. I don't need this.
I just, how many movies, even like, I guess let's go back to the example before we're Breaking Away. How much tension in that movie is brought from the son and the father's relationship?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's what the movie's about. And this movie doesn't do it. Again, it just neglects all relationships. Another thing that really bothered me in this movie, there is no semblance of time in this movie. You have no idea what the time frame is with this movie at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, first off, it doesn't establish when it's taking place.
Yep.
So you're like, okay, I guess this is happening. I think it's happening before whatever version of Gran Turismo they were using was even released. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then, like, we get to the GT Academy. How long is that?
In the movie?
No, not in the movie. Like, actual time frame. Like,
I have no idea.
How long is this? What period of time is this happening over?
No idea.
And then there's one point. One point where we get some semblance of time, and it's when Jan is doing his signing bonus for Nissan, and they say he did it in a year.
Yeah.
And it's like a year since he started GT Academy, a year since like the racing circuit started. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
And there's no semblance of time in this movie, and because of that, you just lose a lot of your investment in it. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I know. I felt the same exact way. I really do feel the exact same way. I don't know why they chose to omit the time frame. And like, this is going to be a grueling year of the GT Academy. That's cool. I mean, that's like a boot camp. That's, you know, build it up. Let's go. But instead, they decide to not tell us. I had no idea it was like 2013. And I think it's important too to tell us what year this is, because if you don't play the Gran Turismo games, or if you tried to play them and found them to be horrible, like I did, like I found them to just be so boring because I don't want to be,
because it's driving simulator.
I was so bored. I'd go play NASCAR 2005 so I could be Jeff Gordon and start crashing everybody, make them explode, and then keep going. But when you, with how far advanced technology has become, and because there was such a different view on video games, like I was saying, in the 90s and very early 2000s than there was in the late 2000s, and how people could profit off of it and how it was done. Because by this point, I mean, what he's doing, he literally has bought a car for himself that he drives in his house. In 1995, I was playing Crash Bandicoot on a PS1, and the thing would freeze every 20 minutes. And if I didn't save, I lost my progress. There's a gigantic difference between those two things. So with how technology has advanced, with how consoles have advanced, with how video games themselves have advanced, you can't even play the first Gran Turismo anymore. It's not worth it.
It's pretty bad. Yeah.
Like, how do you omit that when it is so integral to the progression of everything and the importance of why this is important? Because if this story takes place in 2021, I don't care. Because we already know that, like, people can, like, that video games and stuff have become so much better and that you can use, like, VR and things like that. If this happens in 1995, I think it's epic. If it happens in when it did, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a good story. But I don't know why they chose to omit it, and then also why they chose to jump over the gigantic leaps it made for the racing community. I just don't get it.
Also, did you know GT Academy has been around since 2006?
Yeah.
It was first conceded in 2006, not by whatever Orlando Bloom's character was. And, like, Jan's not even the first graduate of GT Academy.
Yeah.
Also, they were playing these things on, like, PS2s at that time.
I know.
Like, it's completely different. And... did you see my review for this movie?
I saw that you gave it a bad review. I don't think I read it.
Review for this movie is, why did I can't believe I sat down for and watched a 2-hour commercial for a video game console I already own.
I did see that. No, I felt the same way. I felt like it was trying to convince me to go out and buy it. And all I could keep saying in my head every time they were talking about how it's not a video game, it's like it's real, it's simulation. I could think of Ball is Life. I literally just kept hearing Ball is Life in my head all over. Like, because I just wanted to change it to Race is Life. Race is Life. Race is Life. Like, I get it. Like, I get it. But yeah, it really was. It did feel like a commercial. It did feel like a gigantic. And this was, to be fair, this was a movie that was not on our radar to watch. This was a movie that we were not going to do, but we didn't want to do The Equalizer 3 because we didn't want to watch the first two over again in the week. And this got moved around with dates, and things have gotten moved around a lot this year with release schedule because Barbie and Oppenheimer lasted so long. Now we have the Taylor Swift movie coming out in October. So that's moving around some things. So release dates are getting jumbled. And right now people are being a little more free willing to do that because of the writers and actor strikes. So because of that, they're willing a little bit more to move things around because they realize they got to make money on these because they might not make money for a long time now. And so they're trying to make sure they get it. And we just saw The Exorcist, The Believer moved up a week. So it's not coming out on Friday the 13th anymore. It's coming out on October 6th. So we can get the money before the Taylor Swift Eras Tour music video comes out, which I don't understand. Like, I get the Taylor Swift love and I get wanting to go to her concert. Like, I understand that. But like, going to a theater to watch somebody sing songs is not as fun as you think it's going to be. And I used to do, like, I went to, like, one of the Fathom events for, like, the Dave Matthews Band. And it's like, it's literally them playing a concert, but you're not at the concert. You're in a movie theater watching a concert. Like, it's not as exciting. So look, the Swifties are the Swifties. It's going to happen. I don't really care, but it's moving things around. So Gran Turismo wasn't really on our radar. It was a movie we really didn't want to see. And the reviews on it really aren't that bad. And I wonder, like, how are the reviews on this movie not that bad? And are people still in love with Neil Blomkamp? And I don't want to go too much longer on this movie because I want to move on. But Neil Blomkamp, I can officially say, is not a good director. District 9 on the rewatch did not hold up. I used to love that movie, but does not hold up. Chappie does not hold up. And Elysium is not a very good movie. And, like, this is, like, his fourth big-time movie. And I'm over Neil Blomkamp. I'm over him. Like, I just... He was a hot thing with District 9. He was only 30 years old when he made that movie. Like, a lot of young talent there. Because even though District 9 doesn't hold up, it's still an entertaining movie. It just, it's not as deep. And, like, they break the mockumentary style for no reason. And that really ruins it towards the end. But I just don't think there's anything left. And Gran Turismo made no money. And if I'm not mistaken, neither did Elysium and neither did Chappie. Like, I think Jordan Alford says Blomkamp is finished, unfortunately. Like, I think it's going to be a long time before we ever see him make another movie.
Yeah. He wasn't even the original director attached to this because the movie was in production for 10 years. It was supposed to be Joseph Kosinski.
And he's the one who did Top Gun, right?
He did Top Gun Maverick, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe that would have been better. But I mean, also, the strength of Top Gun Maverick isn't the script and the weakness of this movie. Really, the direction isn't the worst part, But the script is so bad.
That's a pretty bad direction in this movie.
And the director, well, I was just going to say, the director does nothing to improve upon any of that. No. Like, it's very basic. It's very, like, this does not feel like it was in the hands of somebody who's had a movie nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. We haven't even touched on how terrible it was every time they put, like, race lines on a real track. Yeah, or, like, they showed, like, a HUD when they were in the car. Like, the video gaming of it was awful. I was okay when they showed, like, the position. Like, the little, like, not-so-blatant position that they would put over the car sometimes. That was fine. But, like, every time they put a race line, or, God forbid, when they're in Le Mans and there's, like, the deconstruction of the car to him sitting back in his bedroom and, like, flashing back to a scene we've already seen in the movie, it's like, I don't care. This is awful. Yeah. This is such a terrible decision. How did this get greenlit?
Yeah.
And even should, like, you know,
you don't even want to move on. You just want to keep ripping. You're going.
I do want to rip just a little bit more, because the thing with Orlando Bloom's character and the pitch to Nissan, I get that PlayStation, like, Sony probably didn't want to put in anything about, like, being pitched themselves this idea. I think it was kind of necessary for this to make sense, though.
Like, wait, oh, yeah, I get what you're
like,
saying.
Like, we needed, like, the Nissan pitch. We also needed the PlayStation, like, the Sony pitch. We needed the pitch to Sony of, like, this is why these two companies can work together to achieve these common goals, right? And, like, what are each of them getting to? Because there are PlayStation logos slapped all over this movie. Everywhere. Yeah. And never a mention of the word PlayStation.
Yep.
No, wait, sorry. There might be one mention of the word PlayStation, and it's by his dad saying he doesn't understand it still.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and maybe PlayStation didn't want to, because right at the beginning of the movie, you see a PlayStation production. It's just slapped right down the front.
Yeah, maybe. So. I don't know. I just think it would make more sense. I think there's, like you said when we started this is a good story. Mm-hmm. Like, this story is very interesting, and it's one that a lot of people don't know about. If this was written like almost any other sports movie, this could have been a very compelling film.
Yeah. I know. And, like, there's enough, like, there could have been family drama, there could have been other drama, but they took the easy way on all of it. It honestly felt like an early 2000, a pre-Final Fantasy X video game, which we're going to talk about Final Fantasy X in a little bit. But a pre-Final Fantasy X video game where the cutscenes were, like, very quick because they didn't have the technology. So, like, it was like, all right, get back to the action, get back. But here's the really quick cutscene that just tells us, like, in the most basic way. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of cuts. Man, the amount of cuts in some of these scenes where it's like, shot, 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 shot.
Yeah.
It was just nauseating. It's
Michael Bay-ish, yeah.
Yeah.
Without the charm of Michael Bay's trashiness. Camp.
Yeah,
camp trashiness. I mean, I honestly, like, enjoy a Michael Bay movie every now and then, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, well, you love Armageddon, so it makes sense.
I love Armageddon. Honestly, I might next time I get another Avengers movie that's as bad as the Avengers, I might just watch Armageddon instead and come on here and talk about how amazing everything is. And you're like, Phil, you really like this? I'm like, no, I watched Armageddon. So anyway, let's jump to the Avengers, because the Avengers is the end of phase one. Insanely hyped when this came out. The reviews on it were astounding. All of the Avengers get together to be friends and fight the evil. And this came out, you know, a couple years after The Dark Knight. This was after all of those Marvel movies built up to this. So everybody was, like, really excited for it. And I get it. I mean, it made a boatload of money. Boatload of money, because this was honestly, like, the culmination of a lot of people's childhoods from so many different generations coming together and being like, wow, they pulled this off. And I went into the theater, and I remember watching it after seeing all the hype, and I was in college, and I was like, wow. After it ended, I turned to my friend and I was like, I think that was good, right? And he was like, yeah, it was all right. And I was like, okay. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, that movie was terrible. And that was the last Marvel movie I watched until Black Panther came out, and Black Panther was nominated for Best Picture. I avoided every other Marvel movie, because if that is what people were going to consider good, And I'm not just talking good. I'm talking on IMDb. This was a top 10 movie for the longest time. I don't know where it is now. I don't go on IMDb. But that was a top 10 movie for the longest time. It's in like the 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has these great reviews. And I was like, if this is what they're going to tell me is a good Marvel movie, I have no need to ever watch another Marvel movie for as long as I live. I'll tell you what, I watched Black Panther and I despise that movie. I hate that movie. I don't think there's like a redeeming quality about it, except that if you had made it, well, the one part of that movie that is redeeming is Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman. Their performances are very, very good. They really are. And especially Michael B. Jordan, he is a very compelling character. That's the only thing about that movie I like. But when I watched this movie again, I was like, all right, try to have an open mind. Captain America really, really was a lot better. Like, it was a really good movie. I really loved Captain America. I was like, just try. It was one of the longest 2 hours and 20 minutes of my life. I mean, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Like, I woke up yesterday, I watched it, and then I drove to Orlando for Halloween Horror Nights, which is about a 2.5 hour drive from my house. We did Halloween Horror Nights, and I drove back. I would rather drive 2.5 hours to Orlando and then not do Halloween Horror Nights and drive back 2.5 hours than ever watch The Avengers again for as long as I live. That's how I really feel. Well, anyway, what do you got, John? Because did you like this movie when it came out? What was your experience the first time you watched?
I did like this movie when it first came out in 2012. I saw it twice in theaters. But, albeit, I was a comic book nerd. I was the type of person who read comic books. I was really into comic books. And I think one of the reasons why we were tricked into thinking this movie was so good was because we didn't have this oversaturation of superhero movies at the time.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to is... And it's because that was something that had never been done before, right? We are now at a point where we have, like, what, 4 official Avengers movies, 5 if we count Captain America Civil War. Like, we've seen this over and over again. It's not as big of a feat as it was in 2012. Mm-hmm. It's not this spectacle anymore. But, like, as someone who had been watching these movies over the preceding 4 years, building up to this, you know, watching Captain America First Avenger in 2011 and seeing that trailer for the Avengers afterwards, like, it's hype. It's so hype. Don't forget, this is also the first official Disney Marvel movie.
That's good.
It had started production before the sale of the Marvel Studios to Disney, but this is the first one that was released under the Disney banner. And I think that is really important. This movie's just written very poorly. Let's just, like, get there right away. The dialogue in this movie, abysmal. So bad. It's Joss Whedon trying to be Joss Whedon of, like, 20 years earlier, and it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that Joss Whedon could be the most overrated human in Hollywood. I really think that I never liked any of his stuff. Now, granted, I never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I did watch Firefly, and I'm glad I kept my eyes in my head after watching that nonsense. That was another one that was so overpraised. Serenity's okay. I know The Cabin in the Woods he had a part in, but, like, I always say, that's a Drew Goddard movie. And the same thing with Toy Story. He got his Oscar nomination in 1995. Yeah, he didn't really write that. Like, that was definitely more Andrew Stanton and Joel Cohen, and Joss Whedon was there, and he got his Oscar nomination, good for him. But Joss Whedon became, like, this fanboy love. He ruined Alien 3 wasn't very good, but his screenplay for Alien Resurrection, which is directed by one of my favorite directors of all time, and Jean-Pierre Jeunet, is terrible. Atlantis the Lost Empire is flat out bad when you rewatch it now. Titan AE does not hold up. Like, He hasn't actually written that many good things. Like he just hasn't. And I don't understand why he always got so praised, except for the fact that he just had his fans. And when I watched The Avengers, when they let The Avengers just be The Avengers, that's when the movie's at its best. When Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. are allowed to just riff with each other, that's when the movie's at its best. But it's the dialogue that is also trying to forward the story that is just terrible. Like, it's just so bad. It's so on the nose. It's not as good as they're trying to make it seem. And it's not as witty as they're trying to make it seem.
No.
There's a couple solid one-liners in this movie, but a couple solid one-liners in a 2 hour and 20 minute movie about superheroes is not enough.
No. Also, there's a story in this movie.
That's my biggest complaint with this movie is there is no story.
There is no plot to this movie whatsoever.
No.
It is literally just like, hey, there's aliens coming. That's the movie. That's the entire movie.
Yeah.
It's built on the fact that like there's no consistency in any of the characters in this film. Nothing that really bridges them to their previous characters. The closest I would say is Tony Stark's character. Because Tony Stark's character, like, I think Jon Favreau's writing style is very similar to Joss Whedon's writing style when it comes to, like, his characters. So I think we kind of, that translated well. But, like, what's Loki's motivation in this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the Loki we just saw is such a proud man. Why is he, like, working for this random person we don't know? Yeah. Like, what's going on here? There's no explanation. No, there's no explanation to what the motivations are here. All of a sudden, Loki wants to rule Earth for some reason. He despises Earth. Like, the entire time, he talks about how much he hates Earth. Like, why does he want to rule it? What is he gaining out of, like, doing this for this, like, big shadowy bad guy? Who is this big shadowy bad guy? That's right, Jordan. He does lack conviction, which we learned in Gran Turismo means you can't pass someone.
You can't pass someone. Exactly. But no, I totally agree. Loki's I think Loki is one of the most interesting characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We talked about that when we talked before, and I thought the biggest problem in Thor is that they don't let Loki be the big bad. They have too many bad guys in that movie.
Yep.
And this one starts off with Loki getting the staff and going in and being intimidating, but we know he's not the bad guy. And like he's not the big bad. And we already know who Loki is. So when he comes in and he's trying to be conniving and we literally get the exact shot of Heath Ledger sitting in the jail cell looking up maniacally, it's the exact shot. Congratulations on copy and pasting. When you do that and Loki doesn't – like we don't know what his motivation is the whole time and we don't really know with the Avengers. It's like, okay, they were assembling the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really understand, at least I didn't understand because I'm not a big comic book nerd. They were assembling the Avengers. Did they know something like this was going to happen? Were they preparing for something like this? And all of the Avengers who have been assembled, so they've never met each other, at least most of them. Now they're all meeting each other. Now they're talking. It takes 30 minutes to get Thor in the movie. It takes 23 minutes to get Tony Stark in the movie, which is a big deal. And it jumps all over the place and really like, the Avengers early on, they're all just kind of like moseying.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like there needed to be more purpose because we already know that they've like become a part of the Avenger initiative. Start the movie with, instead of Nick Fury, like having the thing gets stolen from Stellan Skarsgård and somebody else. And then Nick Fury can be the guy who calls them in and says, look, you're all here now. Instead of spending time going to find them, we just watched five movies of people going to find them. Like I already just watched that happen.
Mm-hmm. I actually think one of the, and like this might sound very blasphemous, I think I love Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. I think he's one of the best casting in all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And part of that happens from the fact that like the ultimate run of Nick Fury, which introduced this version of Nick Fury, was based off Samuel L. Jackson in the first place. So the casting made total sense. Nick Fury is not needed in this movie.
No.
This movie would be so much better.
You're such a waste.
Yeah. This movie would be so much better if these heroes, rather than there being some overarching Avenger initiative, which was set up previously, so like we knew it existed already, so you couldn't do it this way. If these heroes just like organically came together and had to face something that individually they couldn't defeat, the movie would have been 100 times better.
Yeah. Yeah. And like they're all talking about like we need to be together to defeat them. Loki knows that if we're individual, he'll beat us. And it's like, why does Loki know so much about all of you? Why does he know about Captain America? Why does he know about Iron Man?
I think the insinuation is he learned it all from Clint Barton. when he like mind controlled him.
Okay.
I think that's the insinuation because I had the exact same thought. I
mean, there's enough exposition dialogue. They could have had that scene, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Something that like explains what's going on. Like, because we get to the point where Loki's captured and Natasha's interrogating him and she finds out that like his plan is to trigger the Hulk. Yeah. How does he know what the Hulk is? Like, that's, we don't know. Yeah. Like, yeah. You're just like assuming. And like, I think in 2012, because of the spectacle of it all, we were very forgiving to these little plot inconsistencies. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, 11 years later, we've seen way better superhero movies come out than the Avengers. It's just kind of unforgivable at this point, where it's like, why were we so willing to overlook these little details, which a more skilled director would ensure are in his scripts?
Yeah, and they're not little. I mean, I think what aggravated me the most with this movie too is, so this came out the year after The Dark Knight Rises. Now, The Dark Knight Rises...
I thought it was the same year.
I thought The Dark Knight Rises was 2011.
Maybe it was 2011. Maybe that's right.
Hang on, let me
look. Maybe I'm just remembering things wrong.
Oh, no, you're right. It was 2012. Yeah, so you're right. Same year. The Dark Knight Rises has a lot of flaws. It has a lot of flaws. The Dark Knight is a masterpiece. The Dark Knight Rises has a lot of flaws. But when The Dark Knight Rises came out, that movie was nitpicked to death.
Yes.
It was so nit. We can't hear what Tom Hardy is saying. This character doesn't make sense. They killed they butchered the one character. Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was nitpicked relentlessly. And I'm not sitting here. I'm not a huge Nolan defender anymore because, like, you know, I liked Oppenheimer a lot, but, you know, it is what it is. But the fact that these came out the same year, and we were supposed to sit there and be like, wow, The Avengers is a masterpiece of film. The Avengers has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Dark Knight Rises is an 87%. The critics just bought into it so hard and just were willing to overlook everything that they would not give Christopher Nolan the benefit of the doubt for with The Dark Knight Rises. And that, to me, just proves how much better the Christopher Nolan movies are than the Marvel movies, because there were not as high of expectations with the Marvel movies. After The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises needed to be a masterpiece, and it wasn't, so it got nitpicked to death. Whereas The Avengers could come out and be a hodgepodge of nonsense, and everybody would sit there and go, oh my God, it's amazing, because Thor and Iron Man fight each other while Loki sits on the mountain and they just keep beating each other up and Loki's just sitting there, and then Captain America has to come over and be like, guys, don't you understand that the bad guy is on the mountain? It's like, oh my God, like, what am I watching? And it's so, we talked about it, Gran Turismo, it's so corny. And I talked about it in Captain America the First Avenger. I am okay with corniness in comic book movies if it's comic booky, because it should be comic booky. But when you have these characters beating each other up over here after they were just had the bad guy in their clutches, and I'm supposed to believe that they are that stupid and that Loki is just going to sit there and be like, well, I'm going to watch this. This is fun. That is nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. And it all builds to one of the most anticlimactic finishes in the history of film. I don't like the carrier sequence, but I don't need to talk about the carrier sequence right now.
We're going to talk about the carrier sequence.
We will. But the end of this movie is the Avengers, people who we know based on the outfit they wear and the famous person who plays them, based on this movie, because this movie does nothing for character development.
Yes.
That's how we know them, are fighting people that I don't even know the hell the name is, because you do, because you watch this stuff and you pay attention to this stuff.
Yes.
And the first time I learned that they were the Chitauri was when I looked at your review, because I think they say it maybe once or twice in the entire movie. Yep. We are watching them fight a bunch of nameless ones of those while Loki takes a back seat in the corner and the big bad never shows up.
Yeah.
For 40 minutes. That makes
sense. Yeah. And it's just like, it's, this movie is like 80% action sequences, and I don't think if you sat people down to watch this movie who loved this movie when it came out, I don't think anyone can be like, this movie is so amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's some who will.
There are, for sure. And I do think
this is your thing, but I just can't do it.
I think I know within like my circle of friends and stuff, like a lot of people are much lower on this movie than they were originally. It's just, I don't know. There was one logical person in this entire fight sequence at the end, and that was the cop who was like, why would I listen to you? You are dressed in your underwear.
Yeah. Yep.
That and then he like,
I chuckled a little bit, but it's still,
yeah. And then he like completely goes back on it. It's like, no. You should still be asking, why should I listen to you?
And why are you like so strong beating up aliens? Like, what is actually going on right now?
Because the world here doesn't know Captain America exists. As far as they're concerned, Captain America never exists, and he was a product of wartime propaganda.
Yeah. Yep. And I think the other thing is like this to me, the whole time I was watching this, it felt like a TV show with better costuming.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even, at this point, I wouldn't even say with better CGI because the CGI is like whatever. But it was like a TV show with better costuming. And a lot of the dialogue, like we were just talking about, like all of those scenes right there, it felt so TV show-esque. It didn't feel like a movie. It felt
well, that's
so
because Joss Whedon is a TV writer.
I know. Wait, hang on, John. Sorry. Because I really don't like Joss Whedon. He's a TV writer. I used air quotes on that.
I mean, I'm going to say it. Like,
yeah.
I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. A lot of that's nostalgia. A lot of it's because of like the performances in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, some of the stories in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it's a TV show. Joss Whedon didn't write the entire thing.
Yeah, exactly. He created it, sure.
Yeah.
But like, it's the same thing as when D&D create Game of Thrones for TV. Yeah. They get all the flack when it starts falling apart at the end. And yeah, they were the showrunners. They should have done more. Somebody else is writing those scripts most of the time. I mean, I know they write a bunch of the scripts, but there's a lot of other writers who are involved with that who were like writing the dialogue of like whatever. So yeah, it's like people don't realize how much of a team effort it is.
Writing TV shows.
It's not like Joss Whedon doesn't have total control in that room, even if he's the showrunner, because you're the showrunner and you go and you tell Fox, no, I want to do it this way. And Fox says, dude, I don't give a crap what you want to do. You're going to do it the way we want you to do it because this is what your damn budget is.
Exactly. You were talking about costuming, and I actually have a big problem with costuming in this movie because I hate Captain America's costume.
It is I just like so Chris bad. Evans. He's the only part of the movie that I did like.
But even his character isn't consistent with what the character that we saw in the first movie. Now he's kind of like this like man outside of time, and they're like making fun of the fact that he's outside of time with like the I got that reference and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he isn't like the Boy Scout, right? Like, Boy Scout Captain America that we saw in the first movie wouldn't be like, oh, maybe Tony is right and I need to go look to see if they have these Hydra weapons that they're hiding and stuff like that, right? It just, it's not consistent. It's just all these inconsistencies within these characters. I don't understand it, but this costume does not suit the aesthetic of this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's this bright, vibrant blue. And even if you look at, like, the Hulk's green, it's a darker green. It's a grittier green. This blue makes no sense in the aesthetic that the rest of the film is going for.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't look at it that hard. And also, like, Chris Evans was the only thing I could consistently stand in this movie. So maybe that helped me to, like, kind of tune it out a little bit. But, I mean, also, maybe I was just like, wow, the costumes look good because everything else looks like trash. The final fight of this movie is if you ever play Final Fantasy X, the big bad guy in that is called Sin. And Sin is like a giant little like monster thing that floats in the sky and things fall off of him. Copy and paste, dude. Came out two years earlier. Or not 2 years, came out like 12 years earlier, but it's just copy and paste. Just copy and paste. It's like the same thing.
It doesn't make sense either because, like, this is a new alien force we're introducing, and we haven't really established the existence of aliens so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point. We kind of did with, like, the Asgardians and stuff, but, like, it was so subtle that you weren't quite sure. And because the last we saw Loki, I just want to remind you, like, the last we saw Loki, at the end of Thor, he's falling off the Bifrost into space.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, at the post-credit scene, we see him, like, as Stellan Skarsgård's character is seeing the Tesseract for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. It seems like he's operating on his own still.
Yeah.
But the implication here is he has been found by this unnamed big bad at this point and is working for him. And, like, this is the problem that I have with Marvel movies a lot. There's a lot of retconning that happens in these movies.
Yeah.
A lot.
And that's, and I think that I talk about that all the time because you shouldn't have to watch, like, yeah, if it's a sequel, you should have to watch the first one, but you shouldn't have to, the details shouldn't change. It's like who shot first in Star Wars. Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's what they put on film the first time. And like the fact that they're like being like, oh no, we totally planted that in the last movie. It's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. Well, and like even then we had those inconsistencies, right? Like we look at, we were talking about in Thor, how like the Hawkeye introduction was really good. How much better would Black Widow's introduction to this entire cinematic universe be if it was just the first scene with Widow in this movie?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rather than the buildup that we had in Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Makes more sense. And then we get this recasting. We get the recasting of Bruce Banner.
Mm-hmm.
We get Mark Ruffalo instead. While watching this movie, I'm not sure if I like Mark Ruffalo's Bruce Banner or not.
It's hard for me because he seems so meek. Like, yes. He just seems like he's like, he almost plays him like too nervous, yep. Which I think is weird because like Ed Norton had like a confidence to him as he was doing these things, where this Bruce Banner feels like he's like more nervous, even though he's more in control. So yep. why is he playing this as such like a nervous, neurotic guy when he's more in control than the Ed Norton version was?
I mean, part of it comes from the fact that I think they wanted to erase the Ed Norton version completely.
That's true. But then also I have a big problem with this though too, because yes. He's the only one who doesn't, he's like not willing to admit that he should be questioning what's going on with Nick Fury when they're talking yep. about that. Like if he's as neurotic and everything as he is, and he is like more meek, I don't know. It just feels.
It's character inconsistencies. And the biggest character inconsistency in this movie, first off, I love the fact that Bruce Banner always refers to the Hulk as the other guy. Because mm-hmm. watching this entire movie, I kept thinking of Edward Norton instead of the Hulk. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
It made it a lot more enjoyable. Yes. But the Hulk is completely inconsistent. We have never seen the Hulk go on a rampage like he does on the Helicarrier.
Yeah, because when he goes on the rampage in the other one, it's very much to kill the people that are attacking.
It is always targeted. It is always yeah. focused on whoever is attacking him or doing harm to people.
And Natasha is never not attacking him.
No, there is no reason for the Hulk to go after Natasha here. And it doesn't. It's not consistent with how we see the Hulk later in this very film. There's like... Yes, there is a plot in like early Avengers comics where the Hulk is like the bad guy that brings the Avengers together. Even that would have been a more interesting way of doing this than what they did, because you have this inconsistency where the Hulk is like this rampaging monster on this helicarrier, which again, that action sequence lasts another like half hour of this movie, and it's so yeah. bad.
Yeah,
it's so bad. Boring. It makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah. It's like, okay, even like the presence of these enemies of S.H.I.E.L.D. that Loki has gathered together, where did they come from? You can't just like shirk this off with a one line being like S.H.I.E.L.D. has so many enemies.
My favorite part of that is when Phil is dying and Loki is like, your ship is falling out of the sky. And I'm looking at Phil sitting completely stationary. I'm looking at Loki standing without anything moving around him. And the yep. ship is falling out of the sky. Look, I get it from a budget perspective sometimes, but this was a massive budget movie. What in the world? Like, nothing. Like, again, going back to like how people will choose what they nitpick, and it drives me nuts. Because Game of Thrones, Cersei and Jaime are standing in one spot when the ceiling falls. And then the next episode, they show like, oh, it wasn't over there. It's a budget thing, right? Like, they probably should have put more into that. I totally agree with that. But it's like, what do we choose to nitpick? Whereas in this, the ship is falling from the sky and everybody has their perfect balance. Everybody is walking around normal. Like it doesn't feel like the ship is falling from the sky. No. There's a couple scenes where it'll feel like it's falling from the sky, but not consistently. That drives me insane because you have the budget. You have the talent. So do it. Like, yep. like put it together and make it epic. And they don't do it. And like Loki is standing there. Your ship is falling from the sky. Loki, you don't look like you're suffering an ounce of G's right now. Like, give me a break. It's not happening. And those little things throughout this movie drive me absolutely wild. And other than Chris Evans, and I even say Scarlett Johansson, even though I think her character is just like whatever.
Which is wild because Joss Whedon is known for strong female
characters. Strong female characters. I know. I know. Like that was always his thing, was like the mystery female, right? Like the
It makes no sense that Black Widow is written so poorly in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, it all just feels like, it's all gotchas. Yep. I guess that's the best way I would describe the Avengers. It's all gotchas. She's doing an interrogation and then she fights everybody off and they're fighting over in the corner and they realize we got to get Loki. And then like, you know, oh, well, Stellan Skarsgård hit his head. And now he realizes that he opened up the portal. I mean, the whole idea that like your heart is turned to Loki unless you hit your head hard enough.
Yep.
Cool.
That's totally, totally how it works. I mean, there's no explanation for it. And like, even as we get in further and like more is explained about this in the MCU, it actually makes less sense. So be prepared for that.
Cool, man. Well, I mean, I'm happy to be through this one. And now we can get into ones I actually haven't seen. I don't think I watched Iron Man 3. I definitely didn't watch Iron Man 3 because the reviews came out on it and they were pretty good. But I was like, no, I'm done. I've quit.
I actually
the Avengers.
I hadn't seen Iron Man 3 in a long time. I remember really liking it. It's directed by Shane Black.
I do know that, yeah.
So, like, Shane Black's pretty good. I enjoy Shane Black movies. So we'll see how it holds up. But this movie is just... I don't know, like, how to sum up my thoughts on this movie. It's just so... It happened. It happened. Yeah. It was a cultural phenomenon. Everyone flocked to the theaters to see this movie. People loved it. And, because people loved it so much, we got what we get later on, right? Like, if we look at, now that we're looking into phase two, we have a new Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America movie. We have Guardians of the Galaxy, and then we have the next Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
No, Ant-Man ends phase two.
Oh, Ant-Man ends phase two. So we get Ant-Man afterwards. So we're not even really introducing new characters at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Into this MCU. So, but we're at the point where they realize they can start introducing new characters.
Yeah.
And this is like the part where the MCU starts spiraling. And it doesn't start really spiraling until phase three, but we're getting there.
Yeah. I can't wait. You know, I love
Not to mention the weirdest thing that came out of the Avengers. So Phil Coulson is actually probably one of my favorite Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think like Clark Gregg's great.
Yeah. Clark Gregg plays it well.
Yeah, even though I watched a movie he wrote last week and it was terrible, but he plays the role really well. Him being like this binding force for the Avengers, I think is really corny, but like, I get it. I get what Joss Whedon's going for with that. Because you will never watch television shows. Clark, Agents of Coulson comes back to life with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So he comes back to life. It's not a prequel.
It is not a prequel. It is a 7-season TV series that takes place after the Avengers. In the first season, it is tightly intertwined with the MCU. So much so that if you did not see an MCU movie the week it released, it would be spoiled in the next episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's insane.
And then they stopped doing that. They decided, no, these aren't interconnected anymore. It goes completely different. I love that. I watched every episode of that series. I quite enjoyed that series. It's corny as all else. Technically, it's a Joss Whedon series, but it's more done by his brother, Ted. It's interesting. It introduces some... I know it sounds awful. In concept, it sounds terrible.
Thank you, Raptor. You said what I thought.
But like, I mean, Ming-Na Wen is like one of the main characters in that show. And Ming-Na Wen's great. It's an interesting show. It goes all over the place. It introduces some weird Marvel characters who the MCU has just ignored since then. But I don't know. This is a point where they tried the TV thing. Agent Carter came out pretty soon after this as well. And that was like pre-streaming. So that was like their ABC shows, right? Before they switched over to the Netflix shows, which don't exist anymore, but are back to existing again. It's very confusing. This is just like the turning point where the MCU goes way too wild.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. And I think it makes sense because they are like in like the, like it was huge. You kind of had to do this, right? Like you had to build up this. But I do think much like with like what a lot of Disney has done, whether it's Star Wars or MCU or whatever, they've just saturated the market with too much of the same stuff.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, you look, No Way Home was a great success, you know, back when it made the however much money Lifetime.
Yeah.
But the recent one, like Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, only the seventh highest grossing Marvel movie. That's pretty good, but seventh, not adjusting for inflation. And you're talking behind like the first Black Panther, so it didn't have the same hype there. And it was like behind it by hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do wonder, like, will people ever tire? And they have so many lined up. I mean, Thor Love and Thunder was,
the closest thing
they've had to a disaster.
Wait till we get to, Phil, just wait till we get to phase five, because it gets much worse than where we're at now.
So we had that, and then, oh my God, wait, where was, what about Ant-Man? How little did that movie make?
And then Quantumania?
Yeah.
Yeah, a movie that I, for some reason, saw in theaters twice.
Nobody ever said you make good decisions, John.
It was bad.
Anyway, okay. Can we stop talking about this forever?
Yes, absolutely. We definitely can. I think it gets out. It gets a little better next week. I don't know how much. I can't guarantee that it gets much better. But we get Shane Black. We get Guy Pearce. We get way too much Gwyneth Paltrow. But we have a non-John Favreau directed Iron Man movie.
Cool. Well, I hope it's good, John. I really do. I hope it's good.
I can't promise that.
Anyway, the Ant-Man and the Wasp, the Ant-Man Quantumania movie was like the 50th or the 40th highest grossing of their movies. Like, anyway, Phase 5 hasn't been great. But anyway, we'll do it next week. Probably going to be next Wednesday night. I can't do next Monday or Tuesday, so we're probably looking at next Wednesday night, which is the 13th. In terms of the other movie we're going to watch alongside Iron Man 3, it looks like we're going to do The Nun 2. This is really like the last week where it's a struggle bus thing. Barbie and Oppenheimer just murdered everything and it made it really difficult. After this, though, we get The Haunting in Venice, which I think is a no-brainer. Yes. We're very, very excited for The Haunting in Venice. So we got to get through The Nun 2. It's spooky season. I mean, I went to Halloween Horror Nights last night, so I feel like it's spooky season. So maybe The Nun 2 will be pretty good. But even if it's not, it's probably going to be better than Gran Turismo.
Fingers
this
crossed.
Has
Let's
to be the worst
so.
Podcast we do, John. It has to be.
I hope so. I really hope so.
My God. But anyway, okay. We'll see you guys next Wednesday, most likely. Follow us on social media. It's the Survivor Specialist accounts for everything, but we'll keep you posted if anything changes. And that's it. See you next week.